we're going to talk about Shvok HaMaschal HaGayim, because I think that nobody has any clue what's going on by Shvok HaMaschal. Number one, we all know that you get up by Shvok HaMaschal HaGayim, you go and you open the door, right? So why do we open the door at the Seder? The Chassam Sofer, the Beis HaLevi, and the Zecher LiHosef, all to this. So I went with all three spectrums, by the way. The Beis HaLevi is being massively brisker and misnagid, the Chassam Sofer being right in the middle, and the Zecher LiHosef is a Chassidish Sefer, so we went all three sides. They all say because it's Lel Shimur. It's the night where we're not afraid of anything. We're not afraid of the Zugos, which are demons. We're not even afraid of people that are walking by. That people leave their doors open all night long. The remez that we give on this night is we open the front door to show people that there's nothing to be afraid of, that there's nothing to worry about. The orders of Ruach Haskins, you should not lock the door on this night. The Ramah says that's our minhug. And in the schus of that amunah, Mashiach should come and Eliyahu Hanavi should come with it. And that's the idea, supposed to open up your door to be able to let anybody inside. Nobody does it anymore, as you might have noticed. Like nobody does, unless you're up until 3:25. Then you go ahead and you leave your door open. Shouldn't make that much of a difference. The Sefer HaManig is the first to bring down that we expect Mashiach and Eliyahu HaNavi to come right now. We should be able to run out so that even the door isn't blocking us, that they're going to ask us to go, we're just going to go. And we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael immediately, and that's what's going to be right at that moment. That's the idea of what it's supposed to be. Now, the first person to do Shvok HaMaschal, anybody want to guess on this one? First person to do Shvok HaMaschal and open up the door for Eliyahu HaNavi? Rabbi Akiva Ben Ishchai, not bad. 100 years versus 2,000 years ago, not bad. Kind of close. Want to go any further? What? No. That would be still alive, so it's not going to happen. We need a little bit further back, a little bit further back. Earlier than most of us. The first mention of something like Shvok HaMaschal is in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer regarding Yaakov Avinu. Yitzchak gave the brachos to Yaakov and Esav, or what he thought was Esav, on the night of Pesach. It was Leil Pesach, says the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, and said they were following the laws of the Seder, which is why he asked for a chay. The reason why he wanted a chay is for the Korban Chagiga. Because the Chagiga at the time was supposed to be good meats, but to be separate from the Korban Pesach. They wanted to have something different. And they were going to have the Korban Pesach, which was a goat. Yosef, Yaakov Avinu, brought in two goats. One that they used for the Korban Pesach, the other one for the Korban Chagiga. They were going to be the animals there. That's why it says, Vayave lo yayin. In the Pesukim. He brought him wine. Yaakov brought Yitzchak wine. Why did he bring him wine? And on it, there's a weird type of trup. It's called a mercha kfula. It looks like a gershayim, but it's on the other side of the word. It just doesn't make any sense there. It's called a mercha kfula. Because he brought him two cups of wine. Then he fed him the korban pasach, which is the afikomen, which meant he couldn't eat from the korban of Esav, when Esav came later on, right? That's what it was going to be. He got up, Yaakov Avinu, at Shvok HaMaschal to open up the door for Eliyahu HaNavi. He got up to open up the door for Eliyahu HaNavi and saw that Esav was coming and hid himself behind the door. Esav is used to doors opening for him, so he went right in and Yaakov flipped out right around the back. That's the first mention of where there was such a concept of Shvok HaMaschal waiting for Eliyahu HaNavi by Yaakov Avinu, because the neshama of Eliyahu HaNavi existed even back then, even though it's a hard thing to understand. There's a lot of Ramazan that they use for Shvok HaMaschal. For example, the Pe'er Alam brings down that Hagoyim Asher Lo Yida'ucha V'al. Okay, those, the Rashi Davis is Hey Aleph Lamed Yud Vav for Eliyahu. That works out really, really well. Shvok HaMaschal El Hagoyim. The first letters stand for the word Shaddai, as in Shomer Dalsos Hashem, that God watches over the doors of Klal Yisrael. That's what it's supposed to refer from the Siach Yitzchak. But the Nitzutzeh Shimshin brings down Shvok HaMaschal HaGayim, the Rashi Tevis and the Sofei Tevis. That's Shin Chaf Ches Chaf Aleph Lamed Hey Mem is the Gematria 424, which is the Gematria of Mashiach ben David. Very good, Lewis. Mashiach ben David. As the Nitzutzeh Shimshin brings down. They should know, there's a sefer called the Bati HaNefesh. I don't know who in the world this is. Somebody found the sefer, the Bati HaNefesh. It says that the word Shvok comes from the word Kishuf. If you turn around the Kishuf of Mitzrayim, you have Shvok HaMaschal HaGayim. That's what ends up happening. You have the anger going out to them. And Shvok, without the Vav, is the Gematria of Eliyahu HaNavi Zachor Latov. 400 altogether. Very good, right? Now we understand why Eliyahu HaNavi is coming. It's because of the Gematria. They're all there, and that's perfectly fine. That's two. Rav Wolfson brings down that it's a time for Psicha. Where do we mention the word Psach in the Seder?
Psach.
Where do we mention it? No, that's good though. You know, that's one of the reasons why we specifically mention it. But I mean Pesach as in with the tuff itself. With the tuff. Where do we mention the word Pesach? No. It's right by the She'eni Yodea L'Shol. Psachlo. You should start it for him, right? So the psachlo is, it's okay, we haven't done the Seder yet. So the psachlo is going to be that idea of opening up. That She'enu De'eli Shol is supposed to be the idea of you start everything on this night. And that, says Rav Wolfson, is what this is all about. The psich of the front door is supposedly, it's like opening up your hearts to Eliyahu HaNavi, to allow Eliyahu HaNavi in. That's the idea of what you're trying to do with this, and what we're trying to do with Eliyahu HaNavi on this night. Okay, let's go on to the next side. According to Rav Shor brings down from Rav Bunin Mipshischa. Okay, I've got these names, they're coming out of nowhere over here. Rav Bunin Mipshischa brings down, what? Rav Bunin Mipshischa brings down that the author of the Haggadah, because everybody asks who wrote the Haggadah, right? It's a random Tana, was Eliyahu HaNavi. He wrote the Haggadah. And he comes to the Seder to be metaher everyone there. That's number one. And to be mochel everyone for any of their sins. To get everyone for any of their sins, like by a bris milah. Like we all get that in Mechila. Yeah.
Eliyahu, right, is their 15 steps to the Haggadah.
Yeah.
Elu Kah.
Yod Heh. Very good. Very good. I did not know that. Oh. That's very, very good.
Oh.
Like by bris. We're zocheh to everything through the Kedushas Eliyahu. That's why we read about Eliyahu on Shabbos Gadol, which is why I said this on the Shabbos before Pesach, and Shabbos at Gadol, because that's the avoda for Pesach. The avoda for Pesach is to open up. And really, it's not a coincidence that the word Pesach does sound like Pesach, as an open up. Because we all know the word Pesach really comes from the word Pesach, but the mouth talks. And that's what it means by Pesach, even though it's a different letter, but the idea is the same. It sounds the same, and that works out the same as well. Aruch HaShulchan brings down that you should say the word Baruch Haba when you open up the door. Does anybody have that minhag? I do, but I only made it up after I saw it in Aruch HaShulchan. You have it also? We open up the door, and I call, and I say, Baruch Haba. And if he's there, it's awesome. Okay, if he's there, that's unbelievable. I wasn't here this past year, but that's okay. It should still be. The Maharal said that the Rishonim used to tremble when they opened the doors. When they opened the door, they used to tremble, thinking the Eliyahu HaNavi was standing right there. Some even asked for Mechila afterward for not being Malav him out, because they can't see him. They asked for Mechila. They said, please be Mochos for not being able to see you, to be Malav you out. They actually asked for it for Mechila. I still remember one of my best memories. My Bubby and Zadie were never, my father's side weren't from, but they made a Seder. And one year, we always used to go to my other Bubby and Zadie were from in St. Louis. But one year we stayed in Chicago. I must have been really young. I was either 4 or 5 years old. I don't remember what it was. But it's one of my earliest memories of anything that I can ever remember. I remember being at the table at my Bubby's and Zadie's house here in Chicago. And they filled up the cup for Eliyahu HaNavi, the coast for Eliyahu. And I still remember that my Bubby, like, shook the table a little bit. Said it looked like there was a little, you know, drinking of the wine itself, that she looked like it was drinking. And I was like, oh! Eliyahu HaNavi is drinking from the wine. And everybody was like, yeah, Eliyahu HaNavi is drinking. I was like the only kid there, right? And they were all like, Eliyahu HaNavi is drinking from the wine. That's right. Right? And I thought, only like when I was like 32 did I find out that it was my Bubby who was shaking the thing the whole time. And I'm like, what? No! I had a Gili Eliyahu. What are you talking about? I like fasted for 100 days straight for that. But it turned out it was just my Bubby. And then I found out, I looked it up. There's a minhag to do this. There's a minhag to shake the table to make it. Do you have that minhag? You do it. It's unbelievable. It's a real minhag. It's brought down for hundreds of years. People have done it to make it as if Eliyahu HaNavi is drinking. I don't know about the Santa Claus part, but this part is unbelievable to be able to have it. Saturday now, the Imre Noam brings down that the reason when this whole why the idea started or whatever it was is really from B'nai Yisrael on the night of Pesach. Then on the night of Pesach, B'nai Yisrael couldn't leave their houses. Why? Because there was a mashkis in the streets. The destroying angels through the streets, killing anybody you could see. So the Jews weren't allowed to leave. But they opened up their doors and stood by the doors to see what was going on in Mitzrayim. They weren't allowed to leave the doorway, but they stood in the doorway to be able to see, and we do the same. So that would be a minute just to stand in the doorway but not to go all the way out. I don't know what you do with screen doors either. But at least that's there. When the Hasidic Rebbe, the original Rebbe, the Sarmi Belz Rebbe Yeshua Belzer, when he would ask somebody to go open the door, he would ask whoever did it, did you see Eliyahu HaNavi? So one year his grandson, Reb Aaron Belzer, who later on became the Belzer Rebbe, said to his lady, look at that Jew. That's what he said, look at that Jew. And the Rebbe said, and the Rebbe Shua Belzer told him, "My child, you don't have to say everything that you see. Just keep quiet about such things." I mean, he saw him. Rabbi Shua Belzer only asked people who he knew didn't see Eliyahu HaNavi, but people who saw it, it wouldn't be. Rav Aaron, I don't know how old Rav Aaron was at the time, but if you knew Rav Aaron Belzer, if you knew any of the Belzer Hasidim, it would be out there, but that's what it was, but that's what he told him. A Chassid once went to the door by the Kutzker Seder. The Kutzker, remember, he is the Rebbe of the Ger Rebbes. So the Chidusha Rim, the first Ger Rebbe, his Rebbe was a Kutzker Rebbe. Okay? The Kutzker Rebbe was a man of very few words, but everything he said, he weighed. Every word meant something. And you should be scared out of your mind when you heard something. You should think of the Sfas Emes, who is the grandson of the Chidush HaRim. The Sfas Emes, and what he says, Sfas Emes is Rebbe's Rebbe was the Kutzker. That's how great the Kutzker was. So the Kutzker Seder, a Chassid, went to the door and came back very upset. Very upset. Said, the Kutzker saw him and said, "Why are you so upset?" Said to him, "I opened up the door. I expected Eliyahu HaNavi to greet me. I expected Eliyahu HaNavi to be there. So I'm upset that I didn't see Eliyahu HaNavi." So the Rebbe said to him, "Do you think he comes in through the door?" He doesn't. He comes in through your heart. He only comes in through your heart. That's what he told him. Rav Aryeh Levin. Everybody knows Aryeh Levin? Static in Jerusalem? I don't know. But that's the idea of how it's, I guess that's like the remez in physicality, that you open the door and it says, if you're opening your heart, but it will not be to come in. And Rav Aryeh Levin was the static in Yerushalayim. Okay, he was the father-in-law of Rav Yashiv, if that helps. The grandfather-in-law of Rav Chaim, or the grandfather, I should say, of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And the... Okay, well, we can go on, but the whole family is all, they're all related to one another. So every couple throughout all of our earth is all related in some way. But Rav Aryeh Levin, there's a famous, what's it called, Tzaddik in Our Times, right? That's the famous article. Unbelievable book. Really, really good book. You don't like it, do you? Oh my gosh. Rav Aryeh Levin used to go to different jails. He used to hang out by the jails and go talk to the prisoners. He's unbelievable, Rav Aryeh Levin. Yeah, he still goes around. So he used to go to the jails to talk to all the prisoners. Now, back in the day, you should know, the prisoners that were in jail were imprisoned because of the British mandates. Meaning they were in jail not because of any crimes that they might have done, but rather because they upset the British mandate. I mean, there were those who, you know, bombed the King David Hotel, but those were there also. But most of the people that were there were just unjust prisoners who wanted there to be a land of Israel, or maybe it was just in a way, but regardless, and Rabbi Levin used to visit them. So he went in and he asked them how their Seder was, right? Because they must have had a Seder. So he asked them, "How was your Seder last night?" And they said, "We did everything according to Allah, except for Shloch HaMoskot." They wouldn't let us open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi to come in. Okay? That was what the prisoner said. Right? And so Rav Aryeh answered, "You all made a mistake." Said, "Everyone is in prison." So Rav Aryeh Levin, "Everyone's in prison. The only way to release yourself is to make an opening the size of a needle. And if you make that Pesach the size of a needle inside your heart, then you can let Eliyahu HaNavi come in." And that's the idea. And I think that's the idea. The door opening is just a remez, but the real point is to be able to get it inside your heart. That's supposed to be the idea behind it. That's what it's supposed to be. Eliyahu HaNavi, coming to our heart, there's a guy who used to have these terrible thoughts that came into his head, and he couldn't get rid of them. So he went to his Rebbe. I can't remember who the Rebbe is. I wish I could remember. I can't remember who the Rebbe is. But he went to his Rebbe, and I couldn't find the story either. But he went to his Rebbe, and he asked his Rebbe, what should I do? I want to get rid of these terrible thoughts, but I don't know what to do. Every time I go to sleep, every time I start davening, these thoughts are just popping into my head and it's killing me. What am I supposed to do?" So the Rebbe said to him, "There's a person who has worked very hard in this, so you have to go visit him. He'll be able to help you. His name is Reb Zev Wolf. Reb Zev Wolf. He lives in a city called Zhidemir. Okay? Go visit him and he'll be able to help you with it." So the man traveled. He went right then, right, to go up to Zhidemir or whatever it was, and he went to go visit Reb Zev Wolf. He found out where he lived. It was late at night. Right, he goes in and he looks at the window. He sees the Reb Zev Wolf is still up learning. He's learning at the table with a little candle. So he knocks on the door. Right, nobody comes to the door. So he knocks again, a little bit harder. Right, doesn't come to the door. He looks back in. He's sitting there, sitting right there at the table. He's like, okay, maybe he's concentrating really hard on his paper. Right, so these huge knocks on his door. But he doesn't get up. He doesn't even move. He doesn't flinch whatsoever. He can't understand it. He's so upset. So he does it one more time. Nothing happens. He gets off in a huff and goes to an inn in a hotel somewhere. It's because he's just going to have an inn. So he goes to an inn. He sleeps and he wakes up the next morning. He goes to Rav Zev Wolf invites him in. He says, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem, Reb Yid, how are you? What can I do for you? Sit down. Let me get you something to eat, something to drink." And he said, "Listen, I got to ask you. Last night I came to you. You must have heard me knocking. I was knocking like crazy. So I don't understand." So Rav Zev Wolf said, "I did hear you knocking. But you don't have to let anyone in.
Meaning the point is that when somebody is knocking on your door, a Bala Bayis is in charge. And a Bala Bayis lets certain people in and keeps certain people out. And that was the remez for how you're supposed to deal with your thoughts. There are certain thoughts. If you're a Bala Bayis of your body, if you know what you're doing, then you just have to say no, and they'll go away. That's what Zev Wolf was trying to tell him. And in Lemaisa, it doesn't always work that way, but if you're a Bala Bayis of your body, you'll tell yourself, this is what I'm going to think about, this is not what I'm going to think about. That's the idea behind it. Then it brings us down to one of the best stories I've heard in a very, very long time. This story is about a man by the name of Reb Mordechai. Reb Mordechai was the son of the Magid Reb Nachum of Chernobyl. So this is the new Magid of Chernobyl, Reb Mordechai of Chernobyl. Now his job was to support the Lamed Vav Tzadikim of the world. The Lamed Vav, what we call hidden Tzadikim, they're not necessarily hidden. They could be tremendous gonim, but some of them remain hidden. They don't want to be known whatsoever. There's a couple guys. You might see them at Tel Aviv Pizza. You might see them walking around. They're probably one of the Lamed Vav next. But there are Lamed Vav Tzadikim that you'll never know that they're that great, but you might know that they're great. Because it's very hard for people to be able to hide this sort of thing. So the Magid of Chernobyl used to collect money for those people so that they can live normal lives, that they won't have any problems. That's what he used to do. Reb Chaim Mendel was a very rich Jew. He owned many forests. He owned many different areas. He was a very big real estate guy. He was extremely wealthy. He had one son. And if you want to go into the real Hasidic names, you just got Chaim Mendel. Now we got Shalom Shachna. Oh, it's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah, it's always good to get two shins in one name. I mean, but Shalom Shachna was his son. Now, Shalom Shachna was this eligible bachelor. I mean, he was up there and everybody liked him. He was a great guy, smart guy. He wanted to go into learning and everybody loved him. He seemed like the perfect candidate for anyone. He was the only son of Reb Chaim Mendel, the rich man, right? So he would make an excellent husband for any girl. Any girl would be out there. So the Shachanim brought by the very best. This rich girl, this big Talmud Chacham, so that everything. And every single person Rosham Shachna met, or didn't meet, but heard about, because that's not what happened back then. So Rosham Shachna rejected every single one. Said, no, 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 no. So finally, his father sits him down, Reb Chaim Mendel, sits him down and says, I don't understand. Who do you want? He said, I want to marry the forest caretaker's daughter. The forest caretaker was a boor, an Am Haaretz to the extreme. The guy knew absolutely nothing and did absolutely nothing all day long. He just sat there and he knew his forest well. I mean, he was good at that, but he was a nobody. His daughter, right, although his wife had passed away, his daughter must have been a nobody also. I mean, we're talking about the daughter of an Am Haaretz. We're talking about like it's the most disgusting thing in the world, especially a guy who was a forest caretaker together with the richest man throughout the land. I mean, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Like, it's just not what happens. They're not in the same case. They're not even in the same category. They don't belong with one another. There's no way they should be together with one another. So Chaim Mendel said, absolutely not. There's no way you can marry. So Shalom Shachna said, then I'm not getting married. If I can't marry that girl, I'm not going to get married. So he said to him, I'm not going to let you have that happen. So Shalom Shachna refused. And he thought that, okay, it's a fad. You know, he'll get over it after a little bit. But he didn't get over it. Shalom Shachna would not get over it. He wouldn't get married. He's getting old. I mean, he was like 17 or 18 years old already. I mean, this is it's time. So he decided, Reb Chaim Mendel, he's going to pay a visit to the Magid of Kush, of Chernobyl. He's going to go to the Magid of Chernobyl. He's going to ask him what he should do about his son. So he went to the Magid of Chernobyl, and he went in and he gave his usual donation. He helped the Magid of Chernobyl raise a lot of money for the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. So he went to the Magid of Chernobyl and he said to him, "Listen, I've had a lot of problems with my son. Shalom Shachna is only going to marry this person's daughter. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know what to do." He said, "Well, what do you have against the Shidduch?" Said the Magid. He said, "What do I have against the Shidduch? The guy's not in the same category as his daughter. Is a daughter of an Am Haaretz. Why would I want my son to marry that when I'm giving all these unbelievable prospects? Why would I want this? That makes no sense. It's on the first round versus 248th round. That's just not going to happen. I don't want this to happen." So the Magid of Chernobyl said, okay. So then, Reb Chaim Mendel, you know, he waited to hear what the Magid was saying. The Magid was silent for a little bit. And he said to him, "Listen, there's another thing that I really wanted to ask the Magid for a long time." I said, "What?" He said, "I really want to meet one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. I know I'm not allowed to." He said, "But I've been giving you money for years. I've raised money, tons of money for you for years now. I would love to meet one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. Please, Rabbi, can you possibly let me meet somebody like that?" So the Magid of Chernobyl said, listen, I can't do that. I had a promise that I'm not allowed to introduce you to anyone, to the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. The Lamed Vav Tzadikim want to remain hidden. If they want to remain hidden, that's that." He thought for a moment and he said, "You know what? I want you to come to me on Pesach. When you come to me on Pesach, I want you to open up the door for Shvo'ch HaMaschah. When you open up the door for Shvo'ch HaMaschah, you're going to see Eliyahu HaNavi. When Eliyahu HaNavi comes in, he's going to appear in the image of one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. So when you open up the door, you'll see the image of the Lama of Tzaddikim, and then you can ask him your question. When he appears, you can ask him your question, what should I do with my son, with Shalma Shachna, who should he marry? How about that? The guy was like, what, are you kidding me, Chaim Mendel? He's like, yeah, I'll do that in a second. I get to meet Elio and Avi. There's nothing. So he said, listen, it's going to take a lot to the Magid of Shnobel. To be able to meet Elio and Avi, you're going to have to increase the amount of tzivos you do every day. I mean, he actually went to these chassidus. He did went to the mikvah every day, right? You're going to have to increase the amount that you go. You're going to have to give more tzedakah. You're going to have to learn even more than you actually gave. You're going to have to really put yourself to the test. You're going to have to do everything that you possibly do. Fast a little bit more. Do this and everything. You have to prepare yourself. And it's 4 months away. I mean, you got 4 months to prepare yourself. You got to really start getting on it right now. Chaim Mendel said, I'll do it right now. He went back and he got himself all holy. He went to the mikvah every day, 3 times a day. He went and he learned Zohar every day. He sat there and he gave tons of tzedakah. He said he was mamayit himself in business. He was the tiniest diburim and tanius and everything getting himself ready, siguf and everything you can imagine to be able to get himself ready. And when Pesach came, he was ready. He went to the Seder and he dressed in his pristine white clothing. He went to the Magid of Shnobel. The Magid of Shnobel said, oh, I see you're ready for it. And he sat there, and as awesome as the Seder was to be with the Magid of Chernobyl on Pesach, he still couldn't wait for Shlokh Amazik. He kept coming up, and he kept saying, Shlokh is coming, Shlokh is coming. And he was ready for it. And finally, the Suda was over, everything was done, they had just finished benching, and he's ready. They poured the cup for Elio and Avi, and they get up and they say, Shlokh Amazik. They stay over. So he turns over to Chaim Mendel, the Magid of Chernobyl, and says, go open up the door. He gets up, and he's trembling. He opens up the door, and he sees... If you don't know where this story is going by now, you have not read any Hasidic stories ever. And it's time for you to pull out a good Hasidic book and start reading every story that you can possibly imagine, because, come on, I couldn't have given this, there's no way I could have given this away any easier. He sees the picture of Elio and Avi as obviously the forest caretaker's face, right? He was one of the Lama of Tzaddikim. His son had realized there was a Shalom Shachna, but he didn't want to say anything, that he had caught him in the middle of the act, and Chaim Mendel obviously didn't know that, and he saw that. He fainted right there on the ground, and the Magid of Chernobyl came over to him, smiling a little bit, of course, because he's a rebbe, he knew what it was going to be. He took out the little smelling salts, put it underneath his nose. I'm sure he had them ready beforehand, right? Put them underneath his nose. Chaim Mendel got up, just like... So the Magid of Chernobyl smiled and said to him, so what did you see? He's like, all right, you could have just told me. That was bad. And that, we all know what ended up happening. It was a shocker to all of Poland when Chaim Mendel went back and his son, Shalom Shachna, the most eligible bachelor in all of New York area, got engaged to the forest caretaker's daughter, and nobody could understand why, but nobody was telling why. And then all of a sudden, when everything went said and done, because remember, it's a Hasidic wedding, so Chaim Mendel walked down the aisle to go up to his chuppah, and he had the forest caretaker on one side and his father on the other, the forest caretaker wearing his shabby clothing with a little belt made of ropes, right, and goes up and brings him up to the chuppah where the Magid of Chernobyl is being Mesadr Kedushin. I don't know if that actually happened. This is just an assumption, because I'm sure he took a wagon there. So he ended up going up there. He got married. Right afterward, the forest caretaker disappeared. Nobody had any idea where he went. Nobody had any clue where he was, but that was that. He was that. And that's a good little story. I like those Chassidish stories, especially when you can figure it out after the first minute. Those are the really, really good stories that you can really figure it out. What?
His daughter didn't know him.
His daughter what?
She didn't know
all about him?
Yeah.
No, I don't even know if he was really. She was really his daughter. I have no clue. But that's what the story ends with. Like now they didn't understand what to do, and the way everything's all there. The last part is something that really hits you, and we're going to end with this. We all know about the Russia. There's a concept called Hake Eshina, right? Literally, it's blunt his teeth, right? Like you punch him in the mouth so badly that he just like. All his teeth fall out, and then finally the Russia learns his lesson. You're like, you like that? I'll give you more where that comes from. All right, so for our generation, where punching a kid in the face is going to cause VCFS to come knocking down your door, and that'll be good, because then maybe Kol Dichven Yesei V'Yechol, you'll be able to have guests on Pesach night, and it won't just be a lie, because maybe somebody will actually come up to the door, and you'll be like, oh, come in and eat, right? And maybe you'll be able to actually operate. But the truth of the matter is that, obviously, that doesn't really work so much nowadays. You can't punch a guy in the face and just be like, you like that? I've got more, and then kick him while he's down, and just be like, now you're not a Rush anymore, right? And he's just like, yes, I'm a tzaddik for the rest of my life. I will only be a tzaddik. You got me. That's clearly this. So what do you do? So there's a famous line that's given that Haki Eshinov is to blunt his teeth means blunt his sharpness. his sharpness. The famous Rosh Hashanah word is all about the shame of the satan and the nachash and trying to knock down the teeth of the satan so that it doesn't go with it. That's the famous word, right? But this is you blunt the sharpness of the satan. Now, what does that mean, you blunt the sharpness of the Rosh Hashanah? What does he do? Because the Rosh Hashanah is in there with vitriol, with all this poison. He's getting up there and he's just saying, this isn't true, that doesn't happen. Like all these like crazy lines, like one after the other, right? So you go up to him and she's like, no, calm down, okay? Everything's going to be okay. Just calm down. You blunt the sharpness of his claims. You say to him, like, what are you really worried about? He's not worried about the Chukim and the Shvatim and Seder night. He's got another problem somewhere. And maybe eventually he'll be able to, well, my Rebbe once beat me. Maybe that is what's going to be. But at the end of the day, his problem is not what he's asking. The problem is why he's asking it. And that's what it means by blunt his sharpness. Get rid of the sharpness, then you'll be able to take care of him. Because as much, you can answer one question, but it'll come right back with another. And it'll come back with a third, and it'll come back with a fourth. You got to figure out what his real problem is. What is the real issue? The same thing by Shlokha Moscha. Sounds like, pour out your anger and your wrath and everything on the Goyim. I should have Bishim Chaloka or they don't call it out. This is another way of looking at it. Pour out your heat, your warmth, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and give that to the other nations, the world, so that they feel your presence and feel how close you are to them the same way that I feel how close you are to me. Give them a hug, a big hug, and make them understand that you exist. That's what you're asking by Shvokha Mascha. That is the PC way of learning out Shvokha Mascha. Instead of pour out your wrath and kill all. Everyone, them and them. Instead of that, this is the idea of pouring it out in a different way, in a warmth type of way. It's my idea of what Shvokha Mascha could be, but it's a possibility of trying to understand it so that it becomes a little bit easier for us to explain to the non-Jews that are at the Seder table that ask me every year what Shvokha Mascha means and why are we asking to pour out our wrath upon all the nations of the world. Mm-hmm. And I just say, showing. This is a little bit of an answer. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great day.